Hallo zusammen und herzlich willkommen zur 8. Folge von Hörstoff, dem JEF-Podcast zur Verbandsentwicklung. Ich bin Sonja Ebbing, wie die letzten Male auch, und werde gleich auf Englisch wechseln, weil wir heute eine englische Folge haben. This time I'm sitting here with Emma Farrugia. Hi Emma.
Hi Sonja.
Hi, she's currently the Vice President of JEF Europe and will be talking with us about what JEF Europe is doing, how it looks like, what its structure is, and how you can get involved with them. But as always, we will start talking about Emma's history with JEF. And so I want to ask you, Emma, when did you hear of JEF for the first time? Do you still remember when that was?
Yes, I do, Sonja. Actually, it's my 10-year anniversary this year.
Nice.
Yes. I heard about JEF for the first time in 2011 when I went to university as a fresher. And there were so many stands on Freshers Week, basically. And I knew that I wanted to join an organization that was pro-European. And that it was something I believed in already at that age. And I remember I went to a couple of organizations and then I went to the JEF stand, and I immediately liked the people, the mission, the activities that they were doing. And I became a member instantly, actually.
What, the very same day at this stand already?
Yes, I did. Actually. Wow. Yes. I was a member since then, since 2011. But to be honest, I spent the first year or two a bit of an inactive member, just a paying member. But and then I started actually engaging a few years later.
And what was it that you started engaging with? Do you remember what was the first activity that you like actively took part of?
Yes, I do. It was in 2014, the months before the 2014 MEP elections, actually. So I used to go to some events here and there between 2011 and early 14. But that's in 2014, during the MEP elections, is where I really truly remember, you know, sort of engaging and wanting to go to all the events. And they used to have, I started out in Malta, which is a very small country. And JEF Malta was able to get all the MEP candidates at the time at the university to have a debate. And I just found that incredibly fascinating, you know, to sort of put these people on the spot. And that's when I truly became engaged.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember what was the first like official elected mandate that you took over?
Yes. So in 2014, actually, I was elected as an international officer of JEF Malta. Before that, I was in subcommittees, but it's not really an elected position. International officer was my first elected position. And then afterwards, I ran for JEF Malta president, and fortunately, I was elected. So that was the start. So.
Mm-hmm. And that was also still in 2014?
No, 2014-2015 was my international officer mandate, and then 15-16 was my JEF Malta president mandate.
Mm-hmm. And before we continue, just a question out of curiosity, do you have, like, is there only JEF Malta, or do you have like different subsections in the cities? How does it look like?
Yeah, JEF Malta, actually, there's only one organization. There's no local or regional sections. There's only a national section. But as a national section, now even more so than it was during my time in 2014 and 15, it's a relatively big section for just having a national section. So I cannot tell you how many members they have now, but it's a section which is very much engaged on the national level, but also on the European level.
Yeah, I think this will be probably interesting to our listeners, because so far we have only talked about the German context, and you know that we have like the national region, then the national level, then the regional levels like the Bundesländer, and then even like local levels. So it's always interesting to hear how it looks like in different national sections. So thank you. Mm-hmm. And since 2016, when you were president of JEF Malta, what happened then? Like, how did you get up to the European level eventually?
Yeah, so I've always been incredibly fascinated with fascinated and intrigued with the European level of the organization. That was also one other reason why I chose to become a member of JEF Malta all those years ago, and not in any other pro-European organization, was because there was a structure to it and also a European level to it. So, and that's how I became international. That's why I ran for international officer, because I was always engaged. I was always interested in the bigger picture, you know, not just a national context, but having, you know, connections and networks with other JEF sections. So that was always something that I was interested in. And then after becoming JEF Malta president, I was thinking about, you know, how to engage myself on a European level. And I just ran for JEF Europe board member. That was it. I had some ideas. I thought it was always important to have a perspective on the JEF Europe board from a small section. So that's, I had some ideas and I was able to implement them, luckily.
Mm-hmm. And so you first were a board member probably in 2017, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Okay. Okay. And then in 2019, you ran for vice president, which I remember because I took part in the European Congress where that happened.
Fantastic. I'm sure I'm sure I should remember you, but to be completely no, honest with you, Sonia, the German delegation comes with a big crowd, okay?
I'm also always confused, so don't worry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
but, and from mm-hmm. sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to just confirm that indeed I was elected as the vice president in 2019 in the Paris Congress. And yeah, in 2017, in the JEF Malta, not JEF Malta, no, in the Malta Congress, I made my way onto the board for the first time.
And now when you look back at this time, so the 10-year period, what would you say is your favorite memory from all of those 10 years? I know it's difficult to pick. You can always, like, you can also choose two events or two memories, but we would like to hear.
My favorite memory. So, to be completely fair, most of the statutory meetings, the FCs and the congresses that I've been to were very fond memories. Like I said, I've always loved the idea of having friends, Jeffers from all around Europe. So those are very fond memories. But if I had to pick one specific favorite JEF memory, was definitely the first time that I went to Ventotene. I don't know whether the listeners know about Ventotene, but it is this small island basically off the coast of Naples in Italy. And it was a place where basically the fascists had housed their opponents, their political opponents. It was basically an island prison. And that's where Altiero Spinelli, who was one of the founding fathers and definitely a big figure of our Federalist movement, was exiled. And what they didn't understand, the fascists, by putting a bunch of smart, you know, democratic, you know, people political opponents there is that obviously you're putting a concentration of people into one area. So what they did is they came up with the Ventotene Manifesto for a free and united Europe, which is somewhat the basis of Jeff and the Federalist Movement. And once a year, unfortunately, because of COVID, I'm not entirely sure whether it happened last year. Once a year, Jeff Italy, as well as some other organizations in Italy, hosts an intensive seminar there for a week. And it's basically a time where all Jeffers come together and discuss different ideas and really, really immerse ourselves in the Federalist cause and movement. And so the first time that I went in 2018 was really a really, really fond memory of mine.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you also for reminding us of Ventotene. I think we talked about in like the third episode, which was about history, but it's always good to like recall it. And do you know whether it will happen this year? Probably it's not yet decided, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
A seminar.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, everything depends on the current health situation right now. But I really do hope that it can be done, because it's a time. It's really, really a time where us as a network can come together. But we will see. If not, we have other means to keep the Jeff spirit alive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I hope I will be able to get there once, actually. So I hope it'll restart soon. Thank you for sharing your memory with us, Emma. And now we come back to the present. And I wanted to ask you how it looks like to be the vice president of Jeff Europe. So what are your current activities? What's your role in the executive board? What are you actually doing in Jeff Europe right now?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm one of the two vice presidents of the Jeff Europe executive board. And as a vice president, you're in a middle ground between a board member and sort of the president, because you are, you know, implementing the work. You're providing the management, the coordination, representation, but you're also sort of helping the president lead the organization. So that's a really cool place to be. And as far as my competences, everyone on the board has sort of organizational, geographical and political responsibilities. That's how we split it up between us. So in terms of organizational responsibilities, I am the person on the board and aided by other people on the board. But definitely in terms of vice president, I am the one that's mostly in charge of capacity building. So like anything that has to do with the sections, with best practices or capacity building of the sections as a network, that's what I try to work on. We have had several projects such as the Pimp My Jeff program, aimed at developing sections through capacity building initiatives. It's a very intensive program. I also liaise with the Secretariat on our capacity building webinars. I am in touch with Task Force Capacity Building. I work with the pool of trainers, host the Federalist Academy, so all this stuff. And then in terms of geographic, we all have, as a board, we all have sections, national sections that we try to keep in contact with. And I'm lucky enough to be the contact point for Jeff Germany.
That's why you're here, actually. Sorry for interrupting you, but that's why we invited you today. So it's good to remind me of that too.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's really fun to be contact points with certain sections, because, you know, coming from Jeff Malta, I really did not understand how a section like a national section like Jeff Germany functions. You know, you guys have so many different layers In Jeff Malta, basically, we're one board and that's it, you know, and we do what we do as a national section, but that's it. So it's cool to be able to keep in contact with our largest section within the network. So I'm very happy to be your contact point, but I'm also a contact point for Jeff Italy and Jeff Bulgaria. And then in terms of policy, so sort of political responsibilities, everyone has sort of policy areas they keep track of. And my policy areas are sort of the MFF and the EU budget, youth policy, security and defense, and trade. So basically when something happens that warrants Jeff Europe to react on one of these areas, I try to be one of the ones that initiates action at the Jeff Europe level.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds actually like a lot of work because you have those three different sections or tasks. And I know that this is a difficult question to answer, but how much time do you think you spend on these activities, like per week, more or less? What would you think?
Well, there are times which is easier in terms of workload, and then there are weeks which are really heavy. So I can't really assess. But for example, just to give you a taster, this week, for example, 2 days ago, I was luckily I was really happy to be invited to the Jeff Berlin. I'm going to butcher the second part, Brandenburg or something.
Yeah, Brandenburg. It's fine.
Berlin, Brandenburg. Their GMA, and I was speaking there. Very happy to be there. Today I have the podcast. Tomorrow I have a Jeff Europe board meeting for 4 hours, and then in the weekend to come, so in 5 more days, I have an entire weekend of a board meeting. This one is a particularly heavy week, but perhaps next week, you know, I have less, you know, calls and less engaging events, but I spend more time on emails, for example. So it really depends, but it's a very rewarding place to be in. I can't complain.
Yeah, this surely gives us an impression. And just to make sure that our listeners know that the president of Jeff Europe actually is a paid activity, right? So Leonie Martin, who is currently our president, she's actually working for Jeff Europe to be able to keep up with all of the tasks that come up, right?
Indeed, yes. In fact, I wanted to mention it. I mean, as a vice president and all my other friends/colleagues on the board, we're all voluntary. So we have day jobs or day, you know, school, university. But our president and our secretary general, who is sort of part of the board, they are both paid positions full time. So, and I have no idea how they would be able to cope if they weren't.
Yeah. Yeah, because it wasn't always like this, right? I think it was just only implemented in the Paris Congress. So if I'm not wrong.
Actually, it started out in 2018. The previous president before Leonie, he did 1 year of his mandate as a volunteer, and then realized just how much needed to be done and how much, frankly, he couldn't do because he had to sustain himself, you know, through a job. And it was also the year of the MEP elections in 2019. So we had started it out as a pilot project. He was our dummy to be full-time president. And it was recommended to the Congress that it worked. And Leo is our first full-time president in the sense of an entire mandate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Unless she quits. I hope she doesn't quit.
No, I mean, now she's not distracted by other jobs, so I think it will be fine. And yes, and now that we have started talking about like the executive board and the president, could you maybe walk us through the different, let's say, organs of JEF Europe, just like very quickly, so that our listeners know how JEF Europe as an institution or organization functions?
Yeah. So I guess we can start with the executive board, which is where I form part of. There's the president, Léonie Martin, which I mentioned, and she's a full-time, and two vice presidents, myself and my partner in crime, Sebastiano. And then there are four executive board members, and a treasurer. And then there's also the secretary general. Like I said, all of us are volunteers apart from the president and the secretary general. And what this means is that we are all stationed, you know, we all live in different member states. So most of our work happens online. But then a couple of times a year, we try to meet up in different cities to have a board meeting, which is also really fun usually because we get to visit also sections that are in that city. Obviously, we haven't been able to do so in the last year and a half, but that's how it generally works. Then there's also the Federal Committee, which is the structure that we meet in twice a year, and it's made out of national delegates, but also, which is very confusing, and I never understood why on earth it's so confusing in our statutes. But apart from the Federal Committee, we also have directly elected FC members. I wish we would just give them another name. And these are a set of people. Right now we have 16, but it always depends on the size of the organization. We have 16, and they basically have different competences according to what they choose after they're elected. And if I could sum it down a little bit, they usually work on sort of NPCs and political commissions. So they work in resolutions, or else they work in task forces, which are basically like working groups split up on organizational thematic areas. That's the Federal Committee and the FC members. And then I need to definitely mention our European Secretariat, which we call them the Sleep Less Europe More team. Because really, yes, that's exactly what they do. There are public administration, you know, they are the daily management, the projects, they support us and they do all the coordination in the office in Brussels, and the Secretary General is in charge of sort of coordinating the European Secretariat. Currently, we have 8 people in the office, including the Secretary General, but not including the President, the full-time President, because we as a board, we make sure to remind her that she's part of the board and not necessarily the Secretariat. You know, we are very, how do you say, clingy with her. But yeah, I hear that it's a fantastic atmosphere to work in, obviously out of COVID times. And oftentimes there are interns as well working there. So and we often have positions available. So if you ever spot them on our sites, on our social media pages, feel free to apply because apparently it's a fantastic place to work.
Yes, because the staff of the secretariat, they are also paid, right? I don't know if you mentioned that.
Yes, they're paid. So they are essentially employees, and oftentimes they would have already known about Jeff. But sometimes actually, you know, we have people that apply that don't, you know, that don't really know about Jeff because it is a paid, it's a job. But I'm happy to report that most people that we employ are convinced Jeffers at the end, not at the end, but in a couple of months. So
yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I imagine many of them are already at the start because I know that the job postings get spread through the network, and I see them popping up every now and then.
Yeah,
in the feed of Jeff Germany or somewhere.
Yeah, of course. I mean, as much as possible, we try to get people from the network.
Now looking back at those three like sub institutions, levels of Jeff Europe, let me just briefly summarize and relate it to the German like organs that we have, because I think they work quite similar and would be probably very helpful for our listeners to relate them. Because the structure of Jeff Germany looks pretty much the same. We also have an executive board, which is called Bundesvorstand. We have the something that works similar, but not quite like the Federal Committee, which is the Bundesausschuss, which also sends like delegates from the regional level. But it's not quite only restricted to like policy issues. They control the board. But I think it's still similar. And we also have a secretariat in Berlin, where we also have like interns and our paid staff. And so that's pretty similar. Thanks for walking us through. Actually, now it took longer than I expected because I was just like, I kept asking questions, so I'm sorry. Now let's go
to... If I can add one thing.
Sure.
We also have, obviously, the European Congress, which I suppose is equivalent to your BUCO.
Mm-hmm, it is.
Which happens every 2 years. And that's where the fun stuff happens, all the elections, basically.
Yes, yes. And where will this year's Congress be? Have you already picked a venue?
Well, it's a little bit difficult at this point because of COVID. We're not entirely sure, you know. As much as possible, we would very much like to have it an in-person Congress. I mean, I would kill for it at this point, but obviously we need to you know, take it step by step. So no, unfortunately, mm-hmm. It's not yet decided.
Okay, I understand. Yeah. So now after we have looked at this topic, let's briefly look at Jeff Europe in general, because our listeners might not know too much about it already. So one important question I have is how many national sections there are in Jeff Europe?
Yeah, we have 27 full member sections. Coming from all around Europe, so not necessarily within the EU. Obviously, we lack a little bit in Eastern Europe, which is actually where we're trying our hardest to find people that are interested in setting up a section. So if you have any friends, please let us know.
And I know that not all of the Jeff member sections, the national sections, are in countries which are already part of the EU, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like we have Jeff North Macedonia, who is an active member. And a few years back, we had a federal committee there, actually. Now that I'm on the spot, it's going to be very difficult, isn't it, to think of more sections? But yeah.
I think I once looked it up, and I think Norway is also one of those sections.
Yes, of course, Jeff Norway. We also have, now that I'm thinking about it, we also have Jeff Serbia.
Switzerland, maybe?
Switzerland, yes, exactly. I'm just trying to go through the map.
No worries. It doesn't have to be complete. I think it's just interesting to know that, like, it's not a precondition to be part of the EU, to be part of the federalist movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, because as, you know, part of our mission as an organization is to integrate Europe. So why would we limit the membership of European countries to be part of our organization when at the end of the day we want them to be integrated into the EU? So that is the thought process behind it.
Yeah. And beyond the full member sections, there's also candidate sections, right? Could you explain to us what this means?
Yes, so candidate sections are basically sections waiting to be accepted by the Congress to become recognized full member JEF sections. Currently, we only have one, which is JEF Romania, and that is because a year and a half ago, I think in autumn 2018, no, that's more than a year and a half,
Two and a half.
They had requested to be candidate sections, and if I'm not mistaken, they have not yet been accepted. But basically, yeah. So when there is activity in a country that doesn't yet have a JEF section and wants to become a JEF section, then they need to fulfill some requirements, which are in our statutes, and submit their candidacy to a federal committee meeting or a congress. And then they can only be accepted as a full member section at a European congress. And the point of that is basically to see some form of stability for a year, at least for a year, and then they could be recognized as part of the JEF structure. But apart from that, we also have interest groups, which there's no actual like officialness, if that's a word, associated with an interest group. It's basically when there's some activity in a country that are trying to establish a section that could later apply to be a candidate section that could later be accepted as a full member section. Those we call interest groups. And there's a couple of interest groups in Eastern Europe right now, which is really, really hopeful. And I really do hope that they will eventually become full member sections.
Yes. And counting all the official members right now, how many members does JEF Europe have across Europe? You know that?
Yes. So, I mean, it always fluctuates a little bit, and we usually tally up how much our membership is at around May, June, because that is when the JEF sections, JEF national sections, get the dreaded email from the treasurer of JEF Europe to ask them to pay the membership fees, you know, and that's when JEF Germany doesn't like me for a couple of... I'm kidding. But usually it's around 12,500, 13,000 members.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for giving us like the core data on JEF Europe. And now we can talk more about your specific activities in JEF Europe, the capacity building and the political activity. So maybe we start with the political activities in brief and then later on switch to the capacity building, because we know that JEF Europe is sitting in Brussels. So how much does JEF Europe actually get involved with politics and advocacy like on the scene, on the spot in Brussels? What do you do there?
Yeah, so, you know, this is it. There's a lot of involvement in the Brussels bubble, which is what we call it. Definitely even more so now that our president is full-time, because in the past it used to be very difficult for the president to be able to, I suppose, lobby you know, politicians and policymakers when they had a full-time job, potentially doing something else, which could be a conflict of interest. So in the recent years, it's been a little bit more easier in that aspect. And because in actual fact, that's what happens. Our president and our policy officer meet with policymakers, you know, have meetings with MEPs, with politicians, or try to get meetings with journalists, definitely engage with other CSOs in Brussels, and basically to further our agenda. That's always the point. In the last year and a half, it's been a little bit more difficult, obviously, because everything has been switched online. It's just less of a face-to-face meeting or engagement, and it's just happened really in virtual means. A lot of us are also not in Brussels. I happen to be in Brussels at this time, but for example, at the beginning, in my first mandate, I was not in Brussels. I was in Malta. So it was a little bit more difficult to be able to meet, you know, with policymakers and other CSO colleagues in Brussels, because I would have to be traveling for that. But there's a lot of work that is online, even in usual times. I mean, all the campaigns that we think up, you know, most of it is social media based as well, especially not just because of COVID times, but because we are living in the 21st century. So it targets people. We target people a lot via online means. We try to stay relevant by drafting and submitting press releases that can be done through, you know, virtual means, and then these get circulated to journalists and to other stakeholders. So this is how we try our best to stay on top of things and to stay relevant. And I would like to point out one thing that we've been doing, especially in the last year, is trying our best to engage with civil society in Brussels in light of the Conference on the Future of Europe. We had set up a CSO network, I would say about a year ago now, with other, obviously, organizations, and to try and push forward our common agenda when they were sort of coming up with the concept of the Conference of the Future of Europe. And that helped a lot, you know, having this network, and then obviously with the strength of our common voice, we were able to get some MEPs to push forward our idea in the European Parliament resolution. So this is basically how it's done.
Mm-hmm. And could you maybe tell us what CSO is?
Yes, so it's civil society organizations in brief, and obviously it includes a wide array of different NGOs, basically, and Jeff is obviously part of that label, if you want to call it.
And would you say that in recent years that JEF Europe has been able to kind of expand its political activities in Brussels?
Yes and no, I suppose. No in the last year, unfortunately, because mm-hmm. it's been very difficult for everyone.
True.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we've stagnated. I don't think we've gone back. I just think that everyone has you know, been affected by the situation that we currently live in. But yes, because like I said, removing this conflict of interest of the president has made it much easier, not only in terms of time and availability, but also in terms of you know, ability to be able to truly speak on behalf of Jeff without, you know, you having a conflict of interest. I mean, we've had situations in the past where, for example, a president has been associated with a political party, and then you try and meet someone from the opposite political party on behalf of Jeff. And obviously, you go and you're neutral. You tried your best to lobby that person on behalf of Jeff, but they don't take you seriously because you're from the opposing party. So that has helped us a little bit. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And thanks for explaining this. And now let's switch or look at the capacity building, which is your focus in the board. And so let me start by asking you, what is it that national sections need most of the time? I know it's difficult to like sum it up at once, but you can also say like some sections need this and some sections need that. What is it that you like witness what they need?
It's a bit difficult because bigger sections such as, for example, Jeff Germany or Jeff Italy require very different things than, for example, a section like Jeff Bulgaria needs or Jeff Netherlands. But I think in general, what all sections need or at the very least appreciate are tools coming out from the European level, I would say. Certain tools to be able to implement their ideas.
And what kind of tools are you thinking of?
So, for example, we have various different projects, programs, and toolkits that are directed towards different sections. Well, they really are there for all sections, but directed towards specific sections in certain cases. So the webinars, we have capacity building webinars, which is a tool, you know, for people from national sections to be able to take part in. That, I would say, helps really all sections. But then, for example, we have programs such as PIB My Jeff, which is an intensive capacity building program, especially for smaller sections. To be able to grow and to gather competences in a very it's very tailor-made to that section.
Mm-hmm. So like a mentoring?
Exactly. Like you say it's, that? It's a bit like a mentoring. We try not to use the word mentoring because we feel like it has a bit of a bad connotation. But yes, in essence, it's a bit of a mentoring program.
Like a one-on-one
exactly.
Like support.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. And it really targets what they really need, you know, when we get experts in the field, you know, from civil society to come in. So it's not just, for example, myself speaking to one of the Jeff national sections and you know, sort of, I don't know, having a best practices discussion. Not that that's not important and helpful, but we really try to, for example, bring in people from other organizations to give us a different perspective, or people that, for example, are experts in communications and social media management, you know, if that's what the section needs. So yes, it's a very intensive program. But then we also have toolkits, which are available on our website, on advocacy. So advocacy toolkit, we have a capacity building toolkit, we have a Europe at School toolkit, which is the listeners would know about what Europe at School is, but it's a project that is implemented on the European level and many national levels as well, going to schools and giving information about how the EU works. And there is a lot of resources in our Europe at School toolkit. But then we have also other sort of tools/programs that we that we support task force capacity building doing, such as the twinning program, and also initiatives such as Borrow a Jeffer, which is Borrow a Jeffer is a really cool one that I actually want to promote a little bit. It's the baby of Yuso, which is who is the one of the two co-chairs of Task Force Capacity Building, and it's basically an initiative that a section can post on Adopt a Jeffer, which is our official Jeff Facebook group, where you would say, for example, us as a section really need someone to be able to edit this video for us, you know, for a campaign that we are launching. Can anyone from any other section, does anyone have the competences to help us out to do this? So for sure, like if you just try to stay alert on Adopt a Jeffer, if you're already a member, I think it's a really cool community building initiative, but also a way to actually be able to transfer different competences in the network.
Yeah, and before COVID, I actually remember people saying like, I'm crashing in, let's say, Madrid today. Is there a Jeffer who can take me in? Something like this, like pre-COVID, you could see this as well sometimes.
Yeah, this is an Adopt a Jeffer, the Facebook group.
Yeah.
If you guys are not members, please join the group now. It's a really fun community. That's how it actually started, Sonia, actually. This Adopt a Jeffer group was basically a couch surfing group for Jeffers.
You know, nice.
if I'm coming to Hamburg, for example, and I have no place to stay, I could just post on this Adopt a Jeffer group. And a Jeffer would be able to host me for a night or two. So, but now it's actually been expanded a little bit, and we post also initiatives. Sections also post about other things. So it's a big community of basically Jeff spirit.
Mm-hmm. I will have it linked in the description later on. So I'll make sure that some people will join the group. Hopefully, yeah. And could you also tell us a bit more about the twinning program? Because I think we have not yet mentioned it in the podcast.
Yes, so the twinning program has been around for a couple of years. It is actually, it's aimed at sections applying to be part of, to be twinned, basically. And someone from Jeff Europe or from the task force basically matches two sections together that have similar organizations, have sort of similar sort of membership, similar size. And the aim of this is to be able for them not only to get to know each other, because that's always fun to get to know Jeffers from all over Europe, but also to be able to exchange best practices, and hopefully also to be able to organize common events or activities. I remember when I was in Jeff Malta, when I was international officer, actually, I was twinned with Jeff Turingen, I think, or Tubingen, because I always confuse them.
Turing is a city, and Turing is like a region. So
right. So you know, 7 years later, I not much. I haven't learned much. But basically, the point was is that Jeff Malta had sort of similar membership as the membership of the section that we were twinned with, because we were both both of the sections had a lot of their membership from university, from university areas. So we had gotten in touch and exchanged sort of how we do it in Malta and then how they do it there, to see if we can learn anything from each other. And then we had organized an event together. Sometimes this means an online event, but oftentimes as well, we have sections that have been twinned with each other that actually travel to each other's countries and regions. So that is a fun, I think, a fun project to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and always when I think of the twinning or of like the activities of Jeff Europe and the FC and everything, I always think that from all the organizations there are, Jeff probably was one that was prepared best for the current situation, because most of the, like many of the activities and much of the exchange was already online even pre-COVID, right? So everybody was kind of prepared a bit already.
Yeah, we were very lucky that as an organization we were quite digitally competent, thankfully. But obviously the Jeff spirit is much, much funner to be around when we're in person. But I think it still worked a little bit online as well.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we are all looking forward, and there would be like an invigoration of all the Jeff twinning partners meeting simultaneously mm-hmm. everywhere. So that'll be a great time, and I'm already looking forward.
Me too. Me too, very much so.
Yeah. And now you have been talking about what Jeff Europe provides in terms of capacity building. You have also been talking about the webinar. So I remember that I once participated in an on-site training in Brussels as well. Just to give us a brief overview, what kind of topics do these webinars or seminars have?
Yeah, so the online webinars vary. We try to sort of pick a topic or an area to sort of discuss and talk about. From a Jeff Europe level, so from the board level, usually they are a little bit more broader than the webinars or the seminars that are done in the framework of one of our projects. So what I mean by projects is sort of the projects that we get funding for from the European Commission, for example. Those usually have a bit more of a like a topic, like for example, we were doing webinars on Europe at School, sort of within that framework. We had also others on inclusion and minority groups. But from a Jeff Europe level, usually these are a little bit more, you know, sort of from a broader sense on administration, project management, communication strategies, sort of these advocacy, this is what we do. And then the seminars, so the actual face-to-face seminars that we have are always within the frameworks of one of our projects, and that depends always on sort of the topic of the project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And is there something else you want to tell us about the capacity building in general, something that I don't know about, something that's really dear to you, what you really like about doing the like taking care of the capacity building in general? Is there something that the members of Jeff Germany should know about this?
What I like so much about capacity building sort of as a responsibility is truly because you meet people from all sections, and not just sort of sections that have, you know, the resources to do so, but actually it benefits all sections, from our smallest to our largest and most complex structures. I don't have a favorite program. They're all my babies. but I would encourage people from members of Jeff Germany and obviously the different structures to join as well another Facebook page that I'm going to promote. Mm-hmm. It is the Task Force Capacity Building Facebook group. It is managed by two co-chairs, Yuso and Katarina, and they post a lot of our resources. And it's also a place where you can, you know, ask for information and also post your, you know, sort of, how do I say, sort of best practices that you found that worked in your section. And I think it's a really nice environment. So I think it would be beneficial for you as Jeffers, but also from a personal point of view, you also meet a lot of friends. So mm-hmm. that's what I would say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I will also have it linked. And actually, I think I'm not a member of this group yet, so it's about time.
Yes.
After being a member for 6 years.
So. Well, you always figure out new areas of the organization. So
yes. Yes. Thanks for letting me know as well. So great. I will have it linked. And I think this leads us probably to our, how do you say it? I think penultimate question, like the one before the final question. And that is, how can members of JEF Germany get involved with JEF Europe before actually being elected, right? Because that's not always so easy to do, or mm-hmm. it takes a bit more time. But if somebody wants to get involved right away, how could they do it?
Yeah, so there's many different areas that you can get involved. I would split it up mostly in two areas. So if you're a policy geek, I would definitely advise you to get involved on all the discussions or some of the discussions in the political commissions. We have three, PC1, PC2, PC3. PC1 is on sort of institutional institutions and governance. PC2 is on basically internal policy, European internal EU policy. And the third PC is on external affairs policy / governance. And we have discussions there on those different topics that are eventually make their way into JEF Europe policy. The discussions happen on different platforms, but in order to be able to know about them, join the Facebook groups as well. They're very easy to find. It's just JEF Europe, and then you just write PC1 or PC2 or PC3. Something will come up. Just join it and you'll be fine. Those are the groups. All the information is there. Or else, another plug is on our JEF Europe website, which is jeff.eu, you can sign up to our newsletter and you can get all the information in our newsletter, which goes out every 2 weeks.
Okay.
And from another side, no, I need to mention the other side as well.
But wait, because I know that actually we have lost a lot of members on Facebook recently because many of them like signed out and do not use Facebook anymore. If I want to participate in the groups and I don't have Facebook, can I also reach out to them via the website?
Yes. Yes, so the information mostly comes on the Facebook group or via email through our newsletter, or else sometimes you also have it on Instagram. But the actual discussions, they don't happen on Facebook. The discussions happen usually on like Skype or Google Meets, you know, depending on you know which platform they choose. So yeah, for sure you can be a part of that.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And then I was going to mention, if policy is sort of not your strong suit, but you're more interested in the organizational growth of your section, then you can join one of our task forces, which is what I mentioned earlier, which are focused on different sort of organizational issues. We have six of them. We have one, for example, on capacity building. We have one on green transition, which is about how to greenify Jeff and our sections. One on civic education, one on one of our projects, which is the simulation of a European federation. And I'm sure I'm missing others, but there are six and they're on our website. So also, it's the same format. Most of the information is posted on Facebook, sort of when the calls are or when the meetings are. Same in our newsletter. And then they have calls every couple of weeks. It depends on the task force to speak about a topic. So that's how you can definitely stay involved in the European level without having an elected position.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for letting us know. I will put everything in the description. There's usually also like an outro to this podcast where we mention where everybody can like find everything so that it can really like stick and people can take action immediately after listening to the podcast. So thanks for letting us know. And this brings me to the final question of this podcast. It's one question that we ask to all of our guests. And the question is, what is your wish for the future of Jeff? Yeah, that's the question.
Just one wish? It's a big question. What is my wish for the future of Jeff? Well, as European Federalists, we are really in a minority. When I say we are in a minority, I mean outspoken Federalists, because in actual fact, when I meet with many people and discuss about Jeff and what we stand for, they're like, oh, yeah, actually, I believe in that too. I'm like, yeah, okay. So why are you scared to call yourself a European Federalist? But that's besides the point. We are at a minority in terms of, you know, we are still a bit of a taboo community. And that is a disadvantage sometimes, of course. But actually, when we look back at our history, we have really brought about change despite us being sort of a minority. When you look at sort of the Schengen Treaty, you know, the abolishing internal borders, the single currency, these have all been core Federalist topics. You know, they are exactly what we have been fighting for all this time. So the reason why we've been able to do this despite our numerical limitations is, I believe, for two reasons. Number one, because we have always been able to back our ideas with substance. So it's not just, you know, oh, I believe in a European federation, but I don't really understand what this means. You know, we actually understand what this means. These are our policies. You know, we back it up. But also that we've had a united voice throughout history. Not always. As a Federalist movement, there have been times where we've seen splits in the Federalist movements, and I feel like this is when we have not been as strong. So to sum it down, basically to come to a conclusion to this question, my future wish for Jeff is, number one, to obviously keep backing up our ideas with substance. I feel this is very important in order to continue being relevant in the political discussion. And number two is, from an organizational point of view, is that we obviously embrace different ideas, different cultures, different beliefs, different strategies within the Federalist movement. But we stay united as an organization. You know, we try not to drown our own voices and fragment it too much. But we really try to stay, frankly, united in diversity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's great. Actually, that's totally what came to my mind. So thanks for like spelling it out to us, and thanks for sharing your wish. And thanks for being my guest on this podcast for
Und
today.
Auch dieses Mal habe ich natürlich noch ein paar Hinweise für euch
actually,
in der Beschreibung
podcast,
des Podcasts zur Folge. Findet ihr die Links zu den beiden Facebook-Gruppen, einmal zu Adopt a Jeffa und dann zur TF, also Task Force Capacity Building, die ihr auch auf Facebook findet. Es gibt aber auch im Grundstoff der JEF Deutschland einen Link zum Material der Task Force. Also ihr könnt nochmal den Grundstoff aufrufen und findet dann, werdet direkt auf den Google Drive der JEF Europe verlinkt. Und falls ihr euch mehr für die inhaltliche Arbeit der JEF Europe interessiert und da gerne irgendwie bald einsteigen wollt, dann habe ich euch auch die Kontaktdaten zu den drei Political Commissions verlinkt. Genau, und die nächste Folge kehrt dann so ein bisschen zurück auf die Ebene der JEF Deutschland und wir werden sprechen über Finanzen in der JEF und zwar mit zwei SchatzmeisterInnen, die uns mehr darüber erzählen, wie man diese Arbeit eigentlich macht, wie man diese Aufgabe übernimmt und was man eigentlich können muss, wenn man SchatzmeisterInnen wird, zum Beispiel, ob man Mathe können muss. Das werden wir nächstes Mal besprechen. Bis dahin, Lob, Kritik und Wünsche wie immer an podcast@jef.de und ich wünsche euch schöne, frühlingshafte Tage. Macht's gut. Ciao.